Hello everyone and a warm welcome to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is Henrik Palmgren and we are coming to you from Sweden in Scandinavia. And wherever you might be, I'm glad you're here and tune in. The website, as you know, is redicecreations.com. News from around the world and beyond. On our site, you'll also find our radio archive, newsletter, film material, a forum, and much more. We also have a member section on the website. If you're a subscriber, you'll get full access to our radio archive, all our extended interviews, and you can take a look at our short films, and we are currently working on the follow-up to Longevity and the Grail. Also in the process is a live audio and video feed, and we hope to announce a date for our first stream soon, so stay tuned to redicecreations.com. Much is going on here. All right, today our guest on the program is David Wilcock. He's a lecturer, writer, filmmaker, and a researcher of ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. I first heard David Wilcock through some information that was related to Edgar Cayce a few years ago. David is the co-author of The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and this in itself is a fascinating story, and maybe parts of that we could talk a little bit about later on in the program. But right now, David is involved in a film work or a film project entitled Convergence that I would like to talk about. I also want to discuss David's work with the Enterprise mission that Richard Hoagland is behind. And we're also going to talk about the three-part series, a musical soundtrack and content series that is based on the Convergence material that is called Science of Peace. So as you hear, we have a lot to talk about here today. So basically, I want to dive into it right away. So let's say welcome to our guest. Hi, David. Great to have you here. Thank you for coming on Red Ice Creations Radio.
Well, thank you, Henrik, for inviting me. I really appreciate it, and I'm honored to be here.
Excellent. I know that you're involved in a lot of different projects and have much to do, so I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time to be with us here today. And, you know, there's so much to say about your background, all the different things you've been through and been part of. So I would actually encourage people right away to get on over to your website if they want to read some of your background. You have an excellent bio up there. The website is divinecosmos.com. And you can read that bio there and much more articles and fascinating material up there for you. So if you don't mind, David, I would kind of like to focus on what's going on now, you know?
Sure, yeah.
So let's begin with the film, Convergence. I've only heard a little bit about this, pieces here and there. What I'd like to ask you here is when did you first get this idea? You know, when did you hatch the idea for this film project?
Well, the original idea came about as a result of someone who was a film producer seeing me speak when I was in Los Angeles 3 years ago. And actually, I was just meeting with him. His name is Billy Blake. About 5 minutes ago, right before we went on the air, he came over to my house. Mm-hmm. This is an ongoing process. It's something you may not expect that it would take that long just to get to a finished screenplay, but what we're trying to do is something that has never been done in a film before. Typically, this type of material that we're talking about, which I'll get into what that is, ends up in a documentary, and that's where we started for the first year. The material that I go into when I'm lecturing and the material that's in the Science of Peace series you mentioned essentially focuses on DNA. And I know that a lot of people who claim to be channelers or intuitives are focusing on DNA and acting as if it's a really strong essence of how we interface with spirituality. The problem has been, really, that whole field of, you know, channeling in general is kind of in a shambles. There's very rarely do you ever see two channels who agree on anything, and there's a lot of divergent mythologies. Each one seems to have its own pantheon of good guys and bad guys. And basically, you're also dealing with a lot of unscientific assumptions. And if you just state something that you don't have any backup for, like You know, like the one that you hear all the time about Planet X is coming in, or the one that you hear about your DNA is going to turn into 12 strands.
Sure.
You know, some people claim they've photographed things in the sky that's Planet X. It turns out not to be.
Yeah, lens flares. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're going to activate your DNA, but they don't have any proof for it. Well, one of the things that I've done is I did work as an intuitive counselor. I do have my own mystical contact. I do readings, right? I used to do them for clients. I stopped doing them in 2005. But I ended up funding myself, so I had a lot of time to do other things besides working, because the funding was coming from about 8 to 10 hours a week of work. So the whole rest of the time, I didn't watch TV, I didn't party, I didn't do any of this stuff. I was always reading, researching. So there's years and years of time in which I literally was probably doing 14 hours of research a day for over 10 years. And that research all came together, and some of the things that I found did start to focus on DNA. And I found, especially from Russia, a whole bunch of intriguing research that shows that there is a consciousness field. It's not just, consciousness is not just something in the mind. It's actually the energy that goes into making matter. Now, we have a ridiculous scientific belief right now that everything in the universe was created in one explosion at the beginning of time.
Sure.
And that ever since then, it's a static universe and it's just expanding. But everything was created. Well, it's really preposterous, and there's even things that we could talk about, like expanding Earth theory, where if you look at all the continents on the Earth, you can shrink the Earth to 55% of its current size just by removing the oceans. And all the continents fit together like a perfect little jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
And there's Neil Adams, a famous comic book artist who's got a website, neiladams.com, and that's N-E-I-L-A-D-A-M-S, and you can look on his website. And he's done movies where he shows not only the Earth expanding, but the Moon and Mars and, you know, Ganymede on one of the moons of Jupiter. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah, really. I think I saw this actually YouTube clip, I think, of Earth expanding.
Yeah.
Amazing stuff.
Oh, yeah. Now, let's just talk about that one anomaly for a second, okay? Because if that is true, and you can look and see the proof yourself, where the cracks line up perfectly as you shrink things down.
Sure.
That proves right off the bat that physical matter can be created from apparently nothing, because we can't see or measure any apparent energy source flowing into these planets that would be sufficient to cause them to have such massive increases in their physical size. So that actually is a proof that establishes a base reality that we can work off of, which is that matter as we know it has to be drawing off of some hidden energy source in order to sustain itself. And the Earth is a perfect example. We have been led to believe, without question, that the interior of the Earth is made of iron. The only reason why they say that, basically speaking, is because iron conducts magnetic fields. And
exactly.
You think, well, the Earth has a magnetic field, therefore it's got to have an iron core, period. Well, this is ridiculous. There's actually plenty of evidence to show, especially from Russia. In Russia, they call them vacuum domains or natural self-luminous formations. A lot of people might call them UFOs without realizing that in some cases, when you see these balls of light, it's just another natural physical phenomena that our scientists don't really acknowledge. But you have these balls of light that have very strong magnetic fields, and they can be attracted to or reflected from other magnetic sources, as well as having a whole bunch of other strange properties, including things like anti-gravity and even consciousness. They seem to respond to people's thoughts. So this is what's really powering the Earth's magnetic field, and it's also these balls of light that are kind of a much larger form of what's inside the atom, really.
Right. You know, I just wanted to squeeze this in. I've heard theories about that actually gravity is an effect of that the Earth is expanding. What's your ideas about that?
That's absolutely correct. The Earth is expanding as a result of an etheric energy flow, or ether is a good name for this hidden energy. you can call it hyperdimensional energy or whatever. The Russians call it torsion fields.
Mm-hmm.
But etheric is a classic word, so we'll stick with that for now. So there's an etheric energy that flows in to make matter what it is. In mainstream science, you can find plenty of documentation when you look for things like dark matter, dark energy, zero-point energy, quantum field, quantum fluctuations, quantum vacuum, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Virtual photons is another one. Anyway, you're dealing with an etheric energy flowing into the Earth to create it, and then some of it also flows back out. That's an important point. It's a bidirectional flow. If you have two people in a tug-of-war, and one of them pulls harder than the other, the one who's pulling harder than the other is going to get the rope to move towards them.
Sure.
But you got forces on both sides. So the actual movement is a lot less than the force that's being applied. It's just that the movement is only what you see. So gravity is only what we see of two forces that are fighting against each other.
Hmm.
When you think about it that way, you realize that the actual amount of energy flow is much stronger. In fact, if the backflow from the Earth back out, which you could call the anti-gravity force or the levity force, as some people call it, if that backflow wasn't there, the flow of energy going to the Earth is probably so strong it would crush us flat instantaneously.
Jeez.
So it's important to understand that gravity is a dynamic balance of two opposite forces. And the only reason why we get pushed down is because the one that's going into the Earth is stronger than the one coming back out.
Hmm, interesting.
So that answers your question.
Hmm, very interesting. So this is the kind of, you were talking a little bit about the Russians, of course, also in there, and some of their amazing work that they've done. I've read a few reports on the connection between consciousness and the DNA and how that affects everything from words and colors and intention, you know. Is this the kind of material that is in your film, Convergence?
Well, that's not an easy question to answer. The Convergence film is actually the first in a trilogy, and we may even do more than that, but that's what we've planned so far. And some of the things that I've already been telling you are things we have to work up to. What we're basically trying to do in the first film is to essentially establish a foundation that the average world population who's not necessarily metaphysically inclined can sort of have as a cornerstone. So you can imagine what it's like, and I've done it many times, when you have this mountain of information, and then you're trying to go in there and find one specific thing that you can pull out and then sort of build a story around as a string of information.
Mm.
So no, we don't, there are Earth energy vortexes in the movie. We do have some of that. But primarily what we're trying to do, we're not even really talking in the first movie about like the fact that this consciousness energy is also what makes matter. In the first film, what we're really trying to do is simply establish the fundamental reality of consciousness as a non-local energy field.
Mm-hmm.
And more specifically, and this is where it dovetails with the Russian studies, how consciousness interfaces with the DNA molecule, so that you essentially have the DNA acting almost as like an antenna for really what amounts to where our mind actually is. Here's an interesting thing that we were going to put in the script, and I don't think it made it in the latest rewrite, but think about a near-death experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody goes brain dead. Their brain is not showing any brainwave activity. And yet, in many, many instances, they continue to have a fully cognitive process. They continue to think. They continue to react. They see the people in the room that are trying to resuscitate their body. They oftentimes start going through the dark tunnel with the light at the end, and then they meet their relatives who have deceased, et cetera, et cetera. It's the same old story everybody tells.
Mm.
The point of the matter is that during that time that they have an unbroken perception of consciousness, the brain is showing no electrical activity at all.
Hmm.
And so that is one of the many ways in which we can establish that the mind is non-local. The mind is only superficially tethered to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
The brain is actually more of a relay station for the mind. And where it gets even more interesting is the fact that the mind interfaces with us on every single cell in our bodies. So since it is believed by mainstream science that the DNA molecule contains all the code to build the whole body, the DNA, therefore, would contain the whole code to build the brain. And therefore, the brain is non-locally contained in each DNA molecule.
I see, yeah.
By its information.
I guess we almost could say that if we compare to, for instance, take a computer then, that all the parts of a computer are totally, you know, useless unless you turn the energy on and you can actually, you know, start using it, right?
That's exactly right. We have the hardware, and we need to power it and then use the software. And the software is actually, you could say, the energy body. And the power is basically this interface that happens between our reality and a parallel reality. And that's another very complicated subject. There's actually, you could call it a hyperdimensional domain, but basically we have a parallel reality that we are constantly intersecting with.
Okay.
And it's a very strange thing to contemplate, because basically what happens is space and time are inverted in this reality. So that means that in our reality we have three dimensions of space, which we can move around in freely, and we have one dimension of time, meaning that time is essentially a stream that pushes us forward in time, and it doesn't really move around. If you actually get into relativity theory from Einstein, you discover that he says that space and time are a fabric, and that one cannot exist without the other. The two are fundamentally intertwined. So what this ultimately gets to, and the Russians have done amazing work on this stuff, is that our notion of time is as primitive as the dugout canoe. We are so behind the times, pun intended, in terms of how time really functions and what it really is. Time is, in fact, an entire three-dimensional domain. And we only can perceive the reflections of it, much in the same sense of that classic flatland analogy that probably all your readers have heard, where if you live in a flat plane and then a sphere pushes through your plane, all you see is a circle that starts as a dot and gets wider and then gets narrower.
Sure, yeah.
In much the same way, time to us appears to be just something that keeps moving forward. We don't realize, for example, that time is cyclical, that there are cycles of time that overlap each other and actually have influences on our consciousness to such a strong degree that very similar events happen in each iteration of the cycle. So the cycles actually can be mapped out in terms of the ages of the zodiac, which is a subdivision of the precession of the equinoxes. This is the 26,000-year cycle. That many ancient cultures would document in various mythologies.
So,
the cycle that makes the Earth wobble on its axis like a top, slowly wobbling in the opposite direction as it spins. Now, that cycle appears to be not just something in the Earth like the mainstream would tell you. You can find blueprints of the same exact cycle in long-term activity in the sun, and it also appears to be related to energy sheets, essentially, that we're moving through in the galaxy that are causing that rotation in the first place.
Very interesting.
But when we're dealing with cyclical time, I have a book on my site about what's called cyclology, and it's written by a Frenchman named Michel Helmer. And he essentially did some phenomenal research in which he discovered that, first of all, if you take the precession and you chop it down into 12 chunks, they're 2,160 years in length. And many people say, oh, the age of Aquarius, right? We're moving into the age of Aquarius.
Sure.
Well,
yeah.
Each of these ages are 2,160 years long. The last one was the age of Pisces. You have to ask yourself, if this is just an arbitrary thing, why would the ancients have put so much energy into it? Why would they bother to take astrology signs that typically only take 1 month to occur, and then blow it out over the course of 2,160 years? Well, Michel Helmer went back and looked at Roman history, and then advanced Roman history 2,160 years ahead in time, and discovered that the precise nature of events in Roman history were playing out again in American history.
There we go.
And this is like wars lining up with wars.
Yeah.
even the nature of who was in power, how did the government run, what kind of conspiracy happened. Watergate is in there. Jimmy Carter is in there. He was Emperor Cato of Rome. All kinds of very strange things like that.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so, but the biggest one, of course, is 2012. And
oh, yeah.
When you start realizing that these cycles exert such a strong effect on our behavior, that 2,160 years apart from each other, the same events keep repeating themselves in history.
Hmm.
The end of the cycle is really where all the magic is, and there's a very strong effect that can happen. Now, we have a scientist in the U.S., Dr. James Spottiswood, who discovered, he looked at, this was another thing I was going to put in the film, but we just didn't have the time,
mm-hmm.
the screenplay to do it, but Dr. Spottiswood analyzed over 20 years worth of ESP studies, and this was remote viewing, Zener cards, Ganzfeld studies, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
in which ordinary people were tested for how psychic they were. And what he did is he was looking for a universal factor in time that affected how psychic somebody was. Maybe if the sun is at high noon, then there's something about that alignment that makes you more psychic. He couldn't find anything in an ordinary day that would determine how psychic somebody was. However, as soon as he looked at the Earth's position relative to the center of the galaxy, which is called sidereal time, the center of the galaxy's position has a huge effect on how psychic we are. So when you're at 14 hours and 30 minutes sidereal time, and you can go on the internet and look for a sidereal time calculator and find out where it is in your area, when you're at 14 hours, 30 minutes, your psychic ability skyrockets to 400% more effective than normal.
All right. And why is that?
The reason why that matters is it basically is telling us that where we are in the galaxy has a direct impact on how our consciousness functions, and how much of these higher consciousness abilities will come through.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we also have a strong field effect on each other. So, I know I'm going off in a whole bunch of different directions here, but to get back to the core of your original question, this first film doesn't go into half the stuff I've just told you. What we're trying to do is establish the fundamental reality of a consciousness field, so that we can start to open the door on these other discussions, which will then come out in documentaries and other films later.
But
we're establishing a baseline, we're establishing a fundamental that we can work from that proves with great redundancy that consciousness is connected to DNA, flows through DNA, and that it actually is a non-local field that we're all sort of co-creating moment by moment.
Very interesting. You mentioned so many things there that I would love to go back to and address a little bit further. But what I would like to ask you is why target the mainstream? Why is it necessary at this particular time to kind of get this information out to the masses, as it were?
It's probably just a subjective emotional decision on my part that I would like to make an attempt to do that. It may not work. It probably will. I think that what's happening is, for example, my co-executive producer on this project, Billy, has not really experienced synchronicity. Now, I would imagine that most of the people listening to your show are having synchronicity erupt into their lives. This is where, of course, as we all know, you're being taught, you're being acculturated to a physical world in which you're alone here and things happen randomly that are damaging and destructive. Things like the Holocaust are brought up. It's like, look at these terrible things that can happen. There's nothing you can do about it. So you basically have to protect yourself and defend yourself.
Mm.
Well, that leads to the idea of total separation, that you're alone, that you're disempowered, that nobody's there to help you or protect you, that basically it's all or nothing and you're in it for yourself.
Mm.
Synchronicity is what's happening where people's lives are starting to have an intrusion of a transcendent force. In other words, let's say that you're sitting there and you're reading something very provocative in your book, and you say, I wonder what time it is, and you look up at the clock, and it's exactly 11:11, or 3:33, 4:44, something like that.
Mm.
I know one person who would find pennies on the ground, at very, very poignant moments for them. Now, my friend Billy, as I said, he's not experienced this most of his life, but the other day he was going to eat some hot dogs. He had them frozen in the freezer, and he was trying to break them apart with a knife, and they wouldn't break apart, and he couldn't figure it out, because in all the years he's been eating hot dogs, it's never happened, and it just would not come apart. And then he has this thought, I wonder if I'm being told that I shouldn't be eating these hot dogs. Right?
Yeah.
See, these are the kind of silly stories that you can tell are true, because that's how it really happens.
Yeah.
Right? So he's like, I wonder if I shouldn't be eating these hot dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing you know, he hears a knock on the door upstairs, package. He goes upstairs to get the package. The package is from Nutrisystem, and it was a whole bunch of health food that he had specifically ordered so he would start having a healthier diet.
There we go. Hmm. That's nice.
And he calls me up and he's like, do you think this means I shouldn't eat hot dogs? And I'm like, yeah.
That's probably it. Yeah, right.
Or at least decrease how often you eat them.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's happening, man, is that a lot of people are starting to have these things happen. And they don't realize that it's happening to just about everybody. And so I think if we can reach people who are sort of on the fence, where they're kind of believing in this stuff, but they're kind of still not believing in this stuff, you can see that it's a social trend. You look at all the big multinational corporations and their media, everything is going metaphysical. You got Heroes on television, is a very popular television program.
Mm-hmm.
More and more movies coming out with metaphysics in the theme. You know, there's that Will Smith movie coming out, I Am Legend, that's another End Times 2012 kind of movie.
Sure, sure.
So everybody's getting into this, and so if we can help nurture that, then it may have a similar effect as a film like The Secret did, or Bleep, if not greater. So that's basically why we started out reaching out to the common person, because if the average person figures out what we're talking about, it could trigger a social revolution akin to the discovery of powered flight with the Wright brothers. I mean, we're talking about that kind of level. If we can break the scientific stranglehold that has separated spirit from science, which goes all the way back to the formation of the Catholic Church, and then with the Reformation and the Renaissance, the church basically said, okay, you guys work on science, and we're going to do God. And as long as the two don't cross, then we're going to be fine. We won't have any problems.
Sure.
And that artificial division has maintained its integrity all this time, so that you have scientists who are working all week to disprove God's existence and then go to the church to pray to him on Sunday.
Sheesh, it's all messed up. You know, do you think that this has to do with, you were speaking about time earlier, so again, and synchronicity, obviously. Is this what it's all about? Is this the right time? Is it, you know, the good time right now to actually bring this into the mainstream and kind of tutor, I guess, people in this kind of thinking
heighten their awareness? You have to understand that when you start getting into fractals and chaos theory, we've all heard this, the easiest way to begin to talk about this is the classic analogy of the flap of a butterfly's wing on one hemisphere causes a hurricane on the other.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it gets a lot more complicated than that. There's been studies in chaos theory that are most easily duplicated by looking at piles of sand as they form. And what we know is that if you're watching a pile of sand like in an hourglass, you may notice that periodically the little mountain of sand will collapse. And then after it collapses, it quickly rejuvenates back into its original shape, but it will be higher. So, like, as the pile gets higher, you'll see an avalanche on one side, and it comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's what happens, and this has actually been modeled in very powerful supercomputers, where every single particle of sand is a separate part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
What they find is that up until a certain point, you can tell exactly where each particle is going to be and where it's going to go, and you can predict its behavior and its movement.
Mm-hmm.
But right before the avalanche happens, there is something called criticality. And criticality is where the system gets thrown into chaos. and it's where it's just the final tipping point right before the avalanche. And when you get criticality, you get something called self-organizing criticality. And this is very strange, and we still don't really have a good explanation for it in any mainstream sense. When that particle is about, when the sand pile is about to collapse, you cannot predict how it's going to collapse or where it's going to go. All you know is that it's going to change, that almost every agent in the system is going to move.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times we discover that it's one or two agents in the entire system that become the leverage point for the whole change to occur.
Mm.
And so it can happen on a very small level, but basically we also know that once it changes, it always evolves intelligently into a more organized structure. So you can look at it as sand particles, but then that's just the most mundane way to look at it. It
mm-hmm.
becomes a lot more interesting when you look at it in terms of a society or an economy. And so the key, again, and this is where it starts to cross over into the so-called Illuminati or the negative elite, the world leaders with their philosophy of order out of chaos.
Sure, sure.
There is some truth to that in the sense that when the system becomes highly destabilized, there will be random shifts that suddenly self-organize into higher complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why I tell people, don't get all hung up about an economic collapse. I know they're saying that, you know, the economy's about to collapse or whatever.
Mm, yeah.
If there is a weakening of the economy, it's only going to reorganize at a higher level of criticality and basically restructure itself very rapidly because, you know, we have an ongoing medium of exchange and communication that's so robust now that it's not going to be like it was before where you can have single countries that collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't affect anything else, and they don't bounce back very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, the reason why I bring this up is that you're absolutely right. This is the moment. It's because people are starting to throw doubts and questions on everything that they've assumed to be true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've lived in a lie. We've lived in a world that gives you a media that tells you, don't look at the man behind the curtain. Mm-hmm. Don't think that there's any problem. Your government is your family. Your government is like your father and mother, and they will take care of you, and they will protect you from the bad man.
Hmm.
Well, the bad man is the government, right? So when you start to see that, it starts to throw into question all these assumptions you've had, all of these. Most people basically want to live with the trust of a child. They want to just sort of have their life and, you know, earn money and drive their car and watch TV and come home on the weekend and hang out with their children.
Sure.
They don't really want to think too much. They don't want to work too hard. They expect that life is a private phenomenon, that they're not really that integrated with their society, that they're essentially separate entities. Now, I know, and I'm generalizing horribly, and I know in Europe, and I'm sure in Sweden in particular and other countries, it's less like that. But in America, it's very isolated.
Mm-hmm.
You can be right next door to someone, have no idea who they are. And it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we live in a very isolated culture. The Western world in general has a lot of separation.
So,
and what's happening is there's more and more outside nudges telling us that we need to pull together and that we're not doing it right. Global warming is another terrific example, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Here you have the very basic nature of your livelihood, the Earth, apparently turning on you, making your life dangerous, making your life unpredictable, and depending on where in the world you are, there's no place safe on the Earth. People are like, oh, where's the safety land? Well, guess what? You can't have one because everywhere is experiencing climate change.
Mm-hmm.
You get flooding, ice storms, hurricanes, tornadoes, mudslides, wildfires, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just had a fire out my window, you know, two times in a row in the last 2 months.
Oh yeah,
I've
the big
it myself.
Yeah, sheesh.
so all this does is it starts to say, okay, are we doing it right or are we making a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
And the ultimate point that our film is making is that all of these phenomena are the result of our own state of consciousness, and our state of consciousness directly interacts with these phenomena. The first movie, we don't really go into how our consciousness interacts with global warming. But we do express how the average person, each ordinary person, and their level of either fear or trust has a huge impact on the overall level of war and disharmony in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so these global meditations and things like that actually have a very profound effect, and that has been scientifically proven. So that's our goal. Our goal is to get people to realize that if they can exist in a state of harmony in their own mind and decrease the clutter, that that is a field effect that they're then sending out into the cosmos and the earth, which affects everyone else's behavior in a very positive way. So a lot of people are doing spiritual work and they're trying to be very enlightened and very evolved. It's important to remember that that is not just something you're doing for yourself. Even if you don't think that you're having any effect, it's very important that you keep going, because you have a huge effect on the field. And that really, you know, that's what my Science of Peace is about. That's what the film is about. It's all focusing on that basic point, that we have much more power over these events than we would believe we do normally.
And you're also saying here that this chaos that you're describing, like the Illuminati, global warming, or even fear of global warming, end of the world scenario films, whatever, this chaos is a catalyst to wake people up at this particular time, right?
Exactly right. And whatever comes out after the little avalanche is much more organized and much more evolved than what we had before.
Mm.
Just like the little sand pile that has, you know, restructures to a higher level. That's what the Earth is going through now. It doesn't happen as rapidly as it would inside an hourglass with sand, but it's happening now. And so one way that you could sort of define 2012 is sort of like the arbitrary focal point for where all of this is going.
And
actually a lot more complex than that, but that's just one way to look at it.
Sure. And do you believe that 2012 in itself actually is some form of convergence?
I obviously do. It's not as simple as something that I've explained so far, but what we're ultimately apparently dealing with is the basic nature of matter, energy, and consciousness shifting. And that gets into harmonics. So let's talk a little bit about that just so we can set up that point.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the work of Dr. Hans Jenny, and it's spelled J-E-N-N-Y,
well,
Cymatics.
Cymatics, yeah.
Yeah, and I think you guys have written about that. But he talks about how you can vibrate some water that has little particles of dust in them, and it's like a milky water. It's called a colloidal suspension. The little particles are called colloids. You vibrate this water at pure sound resonances, like the white keys on the piano. When you do that, you discover that instead of the water just being milky white, the particles start lining up into little geometric shapes. And depending on what tone you play, that determines what shape you get. And the higher your pitch goes, the more complicated the shape is, and the more beautiful and geometrically interconnected it is. They almost look a little like snowflakes as you get into the higher pitches.
Yeah.
Now, this is not just a phenomenon that's like a gee whiz, look at that, isn't that neat? This is actually the basis of the universe and how matter is constructed. Matter, you could think of matter as like, if you've ever played that game where you get a jar and you fill it with water that's got tons and tons of sugar in it. And then if you hang a string down into that water, what happens if you let it sit there for a while?
I've actually never done this, so please explain.
You grow rock candy. It's called rock candy.
Ah, okay, I see. Okay.
Sugar crystals will start growing on your string, and the water will try to return to water. It's trying to get rid of all that sugar you put in there.
I see.
So the sugar crystallizes.
Ah.
And then you pull it out and you have a treat you can give to a child. Well, what's happening is, in terms of physical matter, you could think of physical matter as like a crystal that's coming out of this fluid. And the fluid is something we usually can't see. And we can't measure, because it's in what I call time-space.
Mm-hmm.
It's this parallel reality that's on the other side, where time is three-dimensional and space is only one-dimensional. So over there, if you pop over there, and that's what all this Stargate travel is about, you can move around physically. You can move, 10 feet forward, but you might move 10 years in our reality.
Hmm.
So if you, you know, that's why in the ancient legends of the fairy circles, you have to go into the fairy ring and then come back out the same way. You, you don't see the fairies until you go inside the fairy circle.
Hmm.
Once you go into the fairy circle, then you find yourself in this parallel reality, and you see all these little people. And then if you actually leave the fairy circle in a different way that you went in, then you may time travel when you come back out.
Jeez.
Now, there's actually a bunch of ancient medieval legends of this that you can read about.
Mm-hmm.
This is based on a very real phenomenon. There are certain times and certain places on the earth where these interdimensional crossing points will happen. And the ancients were very well aware of this, and guess what they did? They built all these structures on those exact points, like Stonehenge, like the Great Pyramid, like Nan Matal or Easter Island. These are structures that have a technology. It's just a technology that we've totally lost track of. But at the right time of the year, if you get the right planetary alignment and so forth, you get a temporary crossover into time-space.
So this is a natural kind of stargate.
Oh, yeah. And it's a great secret that has been kept from us by the people who know about it and have been using it. And then, you know, the ancient technology has now interfaced with technology derived from crashed UFOs, in which, you know, it's actually not as difficult as it sounds. And so the basis of all this, again, is you have these two inverted realities. You have space-time and time-space. And there's a constant energetic flow between the two. The energy flows essentially like a fluid. What we only see is the crystals of the fluid. So it's like a crystallized form of this fluid. Now, the crystal, as I originally mentioned, goes back to harmonics, like Dr. Yeni, the cymatics thing. If you vibrate the fluid at a certain frequency, you get a certain geometry. Well, you look down at, like if you look at table salt, what's the shape of a salt crystal? Everybody knows that. They're little cubes. So, you know, sodium and chlorine come together and they form a little cube. And that's, even at the smallest, tiniest level, that's what it looks like. Well, a cube is one of these basic geometric shapes that you get by vibrating a fluid at a certain sound frequency. So actually, all of physical matter, everything we have around us, is the result of a frequency. And what that also means, as I said, is that if you amplify the frequency, the structure of the matter will change. You can actually transform matter. Here's another thing, which I'm giving you some exclusive stuff I've never said publicly before.
Sounds good.
The science of alchemy is based on the same principle of this fairy ring and the other things I've been telling you about, like Stonehenge and so forth. You can get lead to turn into gold if you do it at the right time of the year in the right place.
Really?
But it's extremely dangerous. It's very, very volatile. It's very likely that you can have an explosion. Because when you're dealing with this, you're talking about gating in a tremendous amount of energy from the other reality. Because as many people have discussed, zero-point energy is extremely powerful. We only have such a tiny teaspoonful of this energy that's around us that we're using. It's just astonishing. So alchemy is another one of those things where if you have the right time of the year and the right planetary alignment and you're on the right part of the Earth's grid system, as it's called, then yes, you can basically get the harmonics of a particular piece of matter to shift into something else. And it also goes into the warp phenomenon. But like Bermuda Triangle, right? That's a classic example. You have a natural vortex on the Earth, and when you go through it at certain times, shifts will happen. Now, again, there was one point where the area that's the Bermuda Triangle was actually above water, and that's part of where the ancient civilization Atlantis was located. That is also real. In fact, I just updated one of my books recently about Paulina Zelitsky, who did the work around Cuba with the sonar and with a submersible submarine, where she found Atlantis down there, pyramids, Stonehenges, sphinxes, all this writing and inscriptions on all these stones, giant stones. She sold the story to National Geographic. They wrote one article about it on the web in May 2002, They never made a television show about it. And for whatever disappointing reason, Paulina is still holding on to all of the footage from the submarine that actually shows the pyramids, shows the Stonehenge, shows the ancient writing.
Really?
And there's this Cuban university that's actually analyzing the writing. They say it looks kind of like hieroglyphics, kind of like Greek, but they can't quite make out what it says because it's not related to any language that we know.
Sheesh.
Now, it's all down there, man. And in fact, if you look at the same chapter, this is in my first book, Shift of the Ages, on my website, divinecosmos.com.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's chapter 14 where I wrote about this stuff. You will find that I was contacted by a woman who worked for the U.S. military, at Guantanamo, which is one of the, our base in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And she started to talk to these Navy SEAL guys who were telling her that they had found Atlantis down there under the water, that it was all around the whole continent of Cuba, the whole little island of Cuba.
Right.
And that what they had found was working technology, that there was stuff down there that was still operational.
Hmm.
And this is just off the chart. So she didn't think any of it was real.
Huh?
It wasn't until she heard me talking about Paulina Zelitsky that she realized, oh my gosh, these guys were telling me all this stuff. I thought everybody was nuts. But they said, yeah, we're going down there, we're finding all these artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
They were bringing up crates, gigantic crates, every day, filled with artifacts.
Really?
That they were shipping away because they were afraid that if the rest of the world found this stuff, that it might be misused.
Huh. So do you have any contact at all with her, and do you know why she doesn't release the material, like on a DVD or something,
She has a child who's in the military and is concerned about him being damaged in his career or possibly being threatened as a result of her coming forward. So it's one of those cases where I would have really liked for her to give a testimony.
Sure.
But a lot of times when you get the real deal, they're not willing to go public. And it's just an unfortunate reality. But I have actually posted almost all of her emails, except for a few things that I had to withhold because they were personal. But in my book, Shift of the Ages, you can find that. If you go to my website, divinecosmos.com, there's an article called Personal Update and Radio on Sunday. And if you go to that Personal Update article, there's a series of three covers of the books inside the article.
Mm-hmm.
And you click on Shift of the Ages and then go to chapter 14, you can read about all this stuff that I'm telling you about.
Oh, excellent. Hey, David, I just want to mention here, we don't have that much time left here in the first segment.
Okay.
Time just fly by. And I want to give the opportunity to talk a little bit about the science of peace before we run out of time here,
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. As you may know, it is the primary way in which I'm able to support everything that I do. I am reliant on public donations/subscriptions/orders in order to keep going.
Mm-hmm.
This is a very interesting phenomenon that happened where I got on Coast to Coast with Art Bell, George Norrie, and as a result of that, I was contacted by someone who wanted a reading, but then when he talked to me on the phone, he said, I also want to do music with you. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, well, everybody has a proposal. Everybody wants something. But then as he kept talking, he said he had 9 Grammy Awards, and that very much changed my attitude.
Okay.
I never expected somebody of that caliber to have found me, but he actually, primarily his Grammys were in recording engineering, but he also has one for a guitar solo that he played in a particular song. And he's metaphysically inclined. He's read the Course in Miracles, which is a very interesting body of revealed teachings.
Mm-hmm.
And we got together, and I delivered a lot of the same material that I've been telling you on this show, but I got into a lot more detail about the DNA stuff and all these different scientific studies that show how you can access your DNA, how it relates to consciousness, how consciousness is a unified energy field. And this is a very important point. This is really a unique product in the sense that we constructed an entire body of music for the sole purpose of driving the experience of the words home.
Mm-hmm.
So even though you can read something that I wrote or hear me on the radio, this is where we actually built a soundtrack around the information so that it not only is a wonderful piece of music, but it actually creates an organic living experience so that as you listen to this and you take the information in, the music is helping you sort of process it and really bring it into a spiritual level. So it's three. We originally were going to release them as compact discs, and we decided to basically make them MP3s. And so they are open source. I mean, theoretically, you know, there's no DRM on them. You could theoretically share them with others, although we ask that you not do that.
Mm-hmm.
They're not right protected or anything. But it's a great way for people to help support us, and it's right there on the front page of Divine Cosmos. You can click on that link. I think one of the most powerful things that we have is in the third section. There's a long meditation, over 25 minutes long,
mm-hmm.
which is basically designed to help clear all the spiritual obstructions that you have to hold you back from your DNA expanding, and to so that you can basically access higher consciousness. So that's the crown jewel of the whole thing. Everything builds up to the third disc or the third file. Each of these discs are like 65 minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is where all the information comes together. You get all the Russian science, the pyramid science, the global warming science, the DNA science. And it all comes into this meditation. And we've had people, and we tell you, don't drive when you're listening to this last section, because it does sort of bring up all this stuff for you. A lot of people have cried when they hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a very powerful revelation type of experience to have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a great thing, and I don't want to self-promote too much on it, but it's just something that if you're interested in it, you can download three free files. They're complete songs from the series, and that's free on the website. And there's just a whole lot of other stuff on the website you can access that's free, you know, whole books that I've written. So there's just much more that you can explore and understand. And I'm really glad that you've listened to the whole show at this point, and just want to thank everyone for being out there. You also will be able to hear more of this show if you're a member with Red Ice Creations. We are going to talk more, and that's part of their subscription, and I guess, Henrik, you can tell them more about that.
Absolutely. I just wanted to squeeze in here also, you know, have you yourself worked a lot with music before? I mean, considering that you mentioned your knowledge in harmonics and things like this, I mean, was this a factor that you kind of incorporated into it when you worked out this CD series?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've been composing my own music since I was in high school. I took a college course in MIDI sequencing. I actually majored in jazz in college. I am a virtuoso jazz drummer.
Oh, nice. Other a drummer, huh? Me too,
yeah.
Actually. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, I can do all the flashy solos and all that kind of stuff. But in fact, originally I thought that's what I was going to be, as a musician.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
This is wonderful because it's the final sort of bringing together of my musical talent with all the spiritual things I've been working on.
Mm, nice.
There's also a music-only CD. If you get the extended version, which is $59.99, the basic three-disc set is $39.99. But if you get the extended set, you get two complete CDs worth of music. And in there, you'll also hear The Journey, which is a piece I wrote all on my own that is very, very profound in terms of its transformative quality. It's all orchestral.
Mm.
Larry is a technician. He works with this software system called GigaStudio, which is what most of the Hollywood movies are using when you hear orchestral scores. They're not actually live orchestras anymore. You might get a live violin or a live cello or horn or something, but a lot of it is all computer-generated. So
sure.
He set me up with an outrageous, you know, incredible system, and I've been able to write some really wonderful music on it. So all that stuff came out in terms of what we wrote for this CD series.
Mm, excellent. So everyone,
yeah.
Head on over to Divine Cosmos and check it out and see if, you know, there's a bunch of articles, interesting stuff up there, and this audio CD series here, and much, much more. So, okay, we're going to actually take a little break here, a good place to take a pause. And we're going to continue talking with David Wilcock in the subscriber section. So I want to say thanks to everyone for tuning in to this first segment, also to Fredrik behind the controls. David, we'll see you on the other side of this break.
Well, Henrik, it's been my pleasure. Thank you.